AIM with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. And today we're coming to you with Maya in the WBAI studios. And beside me is Ralph Pointer. Ralph Schoenman is in California and is joining us by phone. And we have a very special program. Today I had the opportunity to meet one-on-one sitting beside Lynn Stewart. It was incredible, and we're going to discuss that interview. Lynn is listening, as well as the other prisoners at MCC. And also, we're going to talk about a very important event that's taking place tomorrow night, the release of a film about Lynn Stewart. And we're going to have the opportunity for a call-in in the later part of the show. The number, take it down now so we don't have to repeat it often enough, is 212-209-2900. First, Ralph, you got to see Lynn yesterday, too, and talk to her again after my meeting with her today.
Well, it was before your meeting with her today. It's been scheduled every Monday, and without interference from the prison system, I have never missed a visit, only when the prison stopped me from going in. So my visits are the ones I speak about Monday on the program Speak Taking Aim, and our visits were the same. I go in, and I'm very happy to see Lynn. I'm happy to see the condition that she has maintained herself. I kid her and say she looks like Broderick Crawford in some of those old movie films in her dress outfit. And I'm happy to report that she has become, I don't know what the word for it is, conditioned to the activities in the prison. So although when people say, how is she, I start off with, she is in prison, that is not nice. She still has her medical problems, that is not nice. We have problems with the medical system out here, and we fought it, that is not nice. She has her problems in the prison with the medical conditions, and that's worse. But she is maintaining herself. She is doing as well and even better as can be than could be expected. And she sends her well wishes, and people send the well wishes into the prison. And if I were to carry them all, I would have a list that would stretch from here to the prison 50 times with people's names on it. And so Lynn is maintaining herself. Write to her. She will write back. And she talks about her mail to me, and people talk about her responses. So let's just keep it going and keep writing to Lynn. And we have events that Maya will talk to you about.
Well, first, Ralph and I got approved to interview Lynn, and Lynn made it very clear she turned down interviews with National Public Radio, that she wanted Maya and Ralph to be the ones to interview her. As you know, every week we provide an update on the case of Lynn Stewart, and we're following this very closely. Lynn is very dear to us, as she is to all of you. Ralph was to meet with Lynn, and as we've mentioned before on Taking Aim, the prison decided at the last moment, this was at the time of her resentencing, that there was a security problem. And we didn't know if we were the security problem or there was another problem. They would not explain. So we tried again, and fortunately, I was able to schedule an interview. They almost didn't let me in because they wanted to see two picture IDs. But I managed to charm my way in, and it was fantastic to see Lynn. She was glowing during this time, and we had almost 2 hours, about an hour and 45 minutes together, and had a wide-ranging discussion about her conditions in the jail, but most of all, we discussed the context of the case of Lynn Stewart, and that I'd like to go into some detail today, what Lynn had to say about the progression that is taking place in the repression in the United States, a repression that started with the enhanced sentence. First of all, the sentencing, the prosecution of Lynn, as Ralph says, the prosecution and the persecution of Lynn Stewart, the sentencing, and then the rabid reply by the appellate court, which took 2 years, and then their further reply insisting that Judge Codal putting a lot of pressure on him that he enhanced the sentence of 28 months.
Well, basically, they were terrorizing Judge Codal because the message from the Second Circuit judges, Sachs and Walker, and it was exposed, actually, by a member of the Second Circuit, Judge Pooler. They basically said to Codal, if you don't increase the sentence, we'll take the case away from you, and we'll do the sentencing ourselves. I mean, it's a throw away any due process here. They were basically issuing a dictate, along with the most hysterical declarations that Lynn was a lifelong terrorist and that she was facilitating and aiding an attack comparable to that which had happened at Aswan. And they ascribed it to an organization supposedly of the Sheikh, which in fact was a breakaway organization of the Sheikh. The Sheikh's organization was not involved in the events cited. Never mind, the Second Circuit makes it up as they go along. And that's been the basic underlying character of this, not merely the demonization of Lynn, but the targeting of Lynn, because Lynn, in defending the falsely accused Sheikh, was exposing the role of the authorities in the actual terror events, which are the entire rationale for the imperial onslaught that's followed and the massive repression that's unfolding on a rapid basis in the United States against every citizen.
And, Ralph, what you're saying basically is that in the landmark case, when Lynn was defending the Sheikh along with Ramsey Clark and Abdin Jabara, there was a lot of discussion of the role of Emad Ali Salem, the FBI informant, and the fact that he received $1 million in one of the lawyers, Lynn told me, had created this huge display check of $1 million. And this is what he had received in order to coax, coerce, set up the members of the Sheikh's mosque, the guys who had no idea what they were doing. And this was Lynn persisted and exposed the role of the FBI. Her cases have always been political, whether it was in the Brinks case, whether it was in the defense of Larry Davis. These are all political cases, and Lynn has been consistent and persistent during her 30 years. So to target Lynn is a very specific act of the Department of Justice. And it's not just the Bush Department of Justice. Let's be clear. This is the Barack Obama Department of Justice that was insisting on a 30-year sentence at first. They then modified it for a little less than that. But still, they persisted in the persecution of Lynn Stewart. And it is this Barack Obama Department of Justice that has pursued the Holy Land case, where recently the people received 65-year sentences. They brought before the Supreme Court the case of the Humanitarian Law Project, which would enable lawyers and other people to provide some peaceful assistance to groups throughout the world. And it is this Justice Department, particularly the Chicago federal attorneys led by none other than Patrick Fitzgerald, who we know from the case of the Landmarks case and many of the cases around the World Trade Center, it is this Justice Department that has now invaded the homes and invaded the offices of Solidarity and anti-war militants in Chicago and Minneapolis. Ralph?
To understand the importance of the Landmarks case, you have to realize that the Emad Ali Salem had his actions were the template for all of the so-called terrorist cases. They were hatched someplace else, run by and funded by the FBI, and the cases never would have taken place without the FBI and the Egyptian government's input into the actual cases. And we know the Lynn's case was the template for all cases where you had to get the boogeyman of terror into the case. You had to get Bin Laden into the case, and Bin Laden danced all over the case that Lynn was in, and every case after that, every terrorist case, had Bin Laden in it. How he got in it, I'm still a little confused, but they were able to sell that to the public.
As a matter of fact, Ralph, that is, as you say, that is the template. I just want to mention the following, brothers and sisters, because understand clearly, Lynn Stewart, in defending the falsely accused Sheikh, in exposing the role of the FBI and the Mossad in the organizing, funding, and preparation and implementation, not just of the landmark plots, but of the attack on the World Trade Center in 1993 with the official figure of 1,000 wounded and 6 dead, the number is actually higher. That was an inside job. Well, what do you think about the imputation to Osama bin Laden? In the CBS release by Terry McCarthy on the 1st of October, quote, counter-terrorism officials state that Osama bin Laden is involved in the latest terror plot that has caused anxiety across Europe. The plot, which was disrupted at an early stage, is based upon the commando-style attack on Mumbai, India, 2 years ago. Since then, the New York City Police Department has completely revamped its anti-terrorist operations to prevent this attack from happening here. New York is the top of the terrorist target list. That's our operating premise, stated Police Chief Kelly. The attacks were still going on in Mumbai when it was learned that the New York Police Department had 3 officers in Mumbai at the time of the attack. Think about that, brothers and sisters. What's the NYPD doing in Mumbai in anticipation of an attack taking place in Mumbai? Now this predicate about Mumbai being the model for a prepared attack across Europe, it just so happens that there's a general strike in Spain, that the miners are on strike, that the Greek workers are out en masse, that there's a generalized resistance across Europe from Ireland and Iceland to France. Now we have the declaration by ABC News that the U.S. plans law enforcement surge on trains. The U.S. authorities are planning a law enforcement surge along all Amtrak lines, an exercise called Rail Safe. The heads of the country's biggest mass transit system were briefed today on the terror threat. Amtrak is holding high security exercises on Friday. Uniformed officers will be present on all national transit routes, and the article continues. I want to just make one more point about this. The German magazine Der Spiegel has published a lengthy article identifying the source of this so-called terror threat across Europe. It's a single German citizen of Pashtun descent, Ahmad Siddiqui, who is held by the United States Central Intelligence Agency, special units of the CIA, in a CIA black site near the prison on the U.S. airbase at Bagram, where he has been subject to sustained torture, and it is based upon that torture that this Ahmad Siddiqui, held in the CIA black site, is supposed to have told American interrogators of his meetings with bin Laden and high-level al-Qaeda operatives preparing attacks across Europe. Are you kidding me? Bin Laden, who was revealed to have died years ago by Benazir Bhutto the night before she was assassinated, declaring that on the radio that everybody knows bin Laden is dead, now we have a tortured individual in a CIA black site and filtered through the CIA, disclosing that he met with bin Laden and they're preparing al-Qaeda attacks across Europe, and we have what? The U.S. transit system now besieged with police, and the chief of police in New York declaring that they're prepared for terror attacks, and they're taking, quote, law enforcement measures with quite explicit statements as to what they prepare for the American people. We are prepared to deal with multiple attacks at the same time. The police can now quickly access building plans for hotels and soft targets. The job of the police is to make sure these events don't happen, and the forces that will be used include deadly force, said Eugene O'Donnell, professor of police studies at John Jay College. Got the picture?
Ralph, here in New York, what I've noticed is that they have police cars, Homeland Security cars, Ralph Pointer pointed out to me, at the bridges, and they just sit there. They just sit there.
Unattended, with the lights flashing to keep people reminded that they're in a terrorist situation. Who are the terrorists? And let me once again say, why is Lynn Stewart in jail? My friends understand she is in jail because she can explain what happened in the Landmarks case very precisely, very clearly. She can make people understand the judicial role. She can make people understand in a very compelling fashion to make people listen when she speaks. She can draw the media attention to the situation. They put her in jail so that you would have Ralph Pointer, who doesn't explain it nearly as well, who is very passionate, who tries to say everything in two sentences and gets it confused sometimes. So this is what we have. You have me and others explaining the situation as best they can, and they have the explainer, the person on the scene, Lynn Stewart, and they have, and I say
but
to
Ralph, what they've done is they've taken the defender. This is the key to the persecution and prosecution of Lynn Stewart. It is the chilling effect on attorneys throughout the United States as they spread this terror enhancement, this boogeyman created. It's no longer the Red Scare. It is the terror scare. And what you need to do is to take the vigilant, the zealous, the political attorneys such as Lynn Stewart, and you have to incarcerate them if you cannot contain them, and you cannot contain Lynn. And this is why the appellate judges, Lynn and I discussed this, how rabid they were, how angry they were that she didn't show remorse. And I said to Lynn, I asked her, why should she show remorse when she was innocent, and she believes in her innocence? She may have been convicted, but that was a wrongful conviction. You see, for instance, across the country, people who were in jail because of murder, 10, 15 years, and they're given life. The Innocence Project, for one, reveals new DNA evidence that shows these people were wrongfully convicted, wrongfully incarcerated. It is a political trial that Lynn was convicted. It was a moment of the times. And the other thing that needs to be discussed and considered is that the judge, Judge Codal, refused to separate Lynn's case from the case of Ahmed Sattar and Mohammed Yousri. Just as in the Landmarks case, you had the glomming of 10 to 12 defendants so that the sheikh didn't, Lynn didn't have a clear opportunity to present a case that was separate from 10, 12, 13 attorneys all presenting the evidence to a jury. What jury person could ever separate all of the issues? And in the case of Lynn during the trial, they were creating this rabid scene, this incredible furor with videotapes of Osama bin Laden that had nothing to do with the case, and raising issues that may have been appropriate for one or another defendant that certainly weren't appropriate.
But I must interject here. In that Landmarks case, which I did the investigation on, and I was in court most of the time, these were young dupes, hapless, homeless, unemployed people who were sucked in. And as I said, Emad Salem's work was a template, as we see now in the Newberg case. These young men were promised to be the happiest men on the planet. $250,000 to a homeless man who was saying, can you give me $100 for groceries? This is what was used to make these cases up. And I say, make them up. So understand, in the Landmarks case, there was no terror. The terror was the Egyptian government and the American government. And if you don't understand, you've been terrorized after 6 million foreclosures, after joblessness, after unemployment, after the destruction of the school system, then you don't know what terror is. And it is all based on keeping your eye off the ball of what this corrupt, treasonous government that we have in power is doing.
Right.
Keep in mind that the Landmarks case, the plot to blow up the Statue of Liberty and the George Washington Bridge and the Lincoln Tunnel and the Holland Tunnel and the United Nations building and to assassinate Alphonse D'Amato, the then senator and the secretary general of the time of the UN, Boutros Ghali, every single one of these targets and every single one of these claimed plots was hatched by the FBI. These were design targets that were contrived and set up and invented by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The young men who were drawn into meetings of which they nearly had no concept as to what was being proposed to them had nothing to do with this. This was a government operation from beginning to end. Consider this. In the CBS report, one of the key lessons the CBS report states the New York police learned from Mumbai was to move quickly and aggressively. For that reason, they are constantly deploying their rapid response teams all over the city of New York without any advance warning. Since Mumbai, the New York Police Department has trained for multiple attacks at the same time, and it goes on to set the predicate of the Landmarks case that Lynn was exposing the plot of the government to terrorize the American people is being played out as we speak. CBS, ABC reports, the entire propaganda barrage regarding a host of attacks across Europe, warning the U.S. citizens not to travel to Europe because of these terror attacks based on Mumbai, traces back, I repeat, as Der Spiegel has exposed, to a tortured individual at a black CIA site near the Bagram base from beginning to end.
Ralph,
these are government schemes. Lynn Stewart is the victim chosen by the authorities because she was placed to expose and reveal what underlies the so-called war on terror. Government plans to terrorize the people of the United States and the world.
Ralph, as you recall, Richard Bernstein in the New York Times, 1 year after 9/11, had an article in which he stated, if you want to understand 9/11, you had to look at 1991. This was something we picked up on, most people didn't. I found out in the process of preparing for the interview with Lynn, and then I discussed with her, the fact that actually in 1991, Lynn sought to defend one of the young men, one of the suspects in the 1991 case, Ahmed Hijaz. What's interesting in this case is that Ahmed Hijaz was Palestinian, came from the West Bank, where he had been tortured. He had burns all over him, and he had stated these burns, they had burnt him in the shape of the Palestinian nation, and then he had been expelled to Jordan. What's interesting at this moment of 1991 is that the FBI was first trying to say that this was an action of El Fatah. Then they shifted and said that the suspects were linked to Gamat Ismaya, the Islamic organization. They didn't have their story together even in 1991.
But bear in mind, Maya.
Lynn, let me finish. Lynn went to the judge and said, I will defend Ahmed Hijaz for free. For free. I don't even need to be paid to defend him. It turns out that Ahmed Hijaz was in jail from immigration charges
in Texas
at the time of 1991 anyway. And she felt he was a man who should have received political asylum, not to be a suspect in the 1991 case. Judge Duffy refused to assign Lynn. She had one condition. The condition was, you don't have to pay for my legal charges, my time as a lawyer, but I need money for the investigation, and particularly I need money to send someone to Pakistan.
It was a first trip paid to go to Texas to talk to a judge, and then possibly to Pakistan to get more information, to defend him as to where he was.
And Judge Duffy said, you're willing to do with the to accept the legal costs for free, you can pay for the investigator. And she was not in a financial position to do that. She wasn't assigned. And Ahmed Hajjaz, he was assigned a lawyer who did no investigation. And he was then found guilty.
And he is in jail now. But if there's one thing I can say to anyone interested in the truth of what happens in these cases, there is one moment in the trial that Emad Salem has his camera and his recorder going, and they're driving down the FDR Drive, and he looks up at the young man and he says, why don't we blow up these buildings, as they were traveling under the UN. And the young man who was driving looked over and said, are we on TV? And Emad Salem says, yeah, we're on TV. Well, this young man is in jail for the rest of his life for that comment. All he did, he had no idea of where he was, what he was doing, and this was presented in the trial, and the people, the jury sitting there, was so overtaken by the mass media that they believed it was a terror trial. Are we on television? And Emad Salem says yes, because he got caught with the camera. And the young man proceeded down the drive. A young man who was from Newark, New Jersey, who hung out in the Lower East Side, couldn't buy a weapon. And he is in jail for being the armorer. Now, this is amazing stuff. Now, during the trial, I used to laugh about this. No jury in the world is going to find these people guilty. Well, the jury found them guilty. And again, I says, no jury in the world will find Lynn Stewart guilty of terrorism. The people found her guilty of terrorism. This is the power of the destructive media that we have today. So we're here today appealing to you to help us form a media, to keep a media that is going to give us these kind of facts that you are never going to see in the media.
By the way, I want to emphasize in regard to what Lynn has been exposing and the role she played in showing the hand of the authorities in the targeting and destruction of these completely hapless and innocent individuals. One has to bear in mind that the Israeli intelligence communication service, Matara, had actually given an entire account of the pending bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993, and in fact, they had not just a question of prior knowledge, that they were already ascribing it to Palestinians affiliated with the PLO. And indeed, the person who was the who arranged the safe house and whose name was on the right of rental van agreement is Guzi Hadass of the Mossad. It's the FBI. It's the Mossad. It's the Central Intelligence Agency. It's the ruling class that is creating these bizarre and arcane plots ascribed to hapless others. And the lawyer, the advocate, the person who was has the evidence in hand in a court of law to expose the hand of the authorities is Lynn Stewart. Why do you think she's targeted, brothers and sisters? Because she is the person who has in her hands the evidence of the criminality of the rulers of this society. And indeed, it's instructive to note, to bring this up to the present moment, because what took place in 1991 and 1993 and the role of Lynn in articulating the evidence and of defending the innocent and of exposing the role of the authorities in these activities is coming right back to us as we speak. Consider that the CNN report discloses that German officials demanded access to this Ahmad Siddiqui, who they then disclosed was, quote, divulging new, unverified information. This is CNN. Every day, German intelligence sources stated. German officials stated, on the basis of this, we have no plans to raise our country's security level, unquote. Giving the lie to this pathetic individual tortured in a black site, CIA black site in near Bagram. The entire genesis of this fake threat to stage Mumbai-like terror attacks across Europe, and now across the New York transit system, across the... Consider, brothers and sisters, this is the architecture of the fascist state unfolding before our eyes.
And, Ralph, this is a good moment to break for station ID.
My name is Jacqueline Mulekatete, a Rwandan genocide survivor and activist, and you're listening to WBAI at 99.5 FM in New York City. Nitwa Jacqueline Mulekatete, ndo mureskape ya genocide y'Abatutsi yabaye muri 1994 mu Rwanda, murimo kumva WBAI at 99.5 FM hano mu mujyi wa New York.
This is something special for you.
Hi, I'm Delphine Blue, inviting you to join me every Tuesday night from 9 to 11 for Shocking Blue, here on listener-supported WBAI at 99.5 FM in New York City.
Taking Aim with
Roshan
and Maya Schoen. We're here for the second part of this special program. I'm in the WBAI studios with Ralph Poynter. Ralph is in California. We're going to have a little more discussion, and then we're going to go to your phone calls.
May I ask, Maya, I mean, you've spent two precious hours with Lynn. I think we should use this time for you to expound upon what Lynn discussed with you today. This is an extraordinarily important interview, and we haven't heard enough of it.
Well, Ralph, we're going to do more of it over the coming weeks, but I want to stress that the discussion Lynn and I had about the context of her case. As you know, Lynn is a person with the biggest heart of everyone, and she's always thinking of other people, the other political prisoners, such as Mumia Abu-Jamal, and everyone else. And it is in this progression that she sees with her case, the enhanced sentencing, the Holy Land sentences, the Humanitarian Law Project, and most recently with the raids of the Solidarity activists who are there now going to have the grand jury subpoenas of these people, and they face the decision of resisting speaking before the grand jury. Remember that they not only took the computers and the files of all these people, they took their children's toys and books. And Lynn actually had a case also where this had happened. And the issue now, as Lynn says, is where is everyone in their position? There have been demonstrations across the country resisting and opposing these raids. But these raids are happening more frequently. It's similar to the Palmer raids. And as Lynn says, we need to have a complete listing, a chart of all the raids, and we need to organize all of us to speak out, to demonstrate, to organize, to... This is a new stage, and this is what concerns Lynn most of all. And with her case, she is. There will be an announcements in the coming weeks about her new team of lawyers and for the appeal, because Lynn is struggling to the end. There will be an appeal of Judge Codal's resentence. It can only be on narrow terms. They can't revisit the entire case. But there are key issues. There are the key issues of what is the First Amendment, as Lynn states clearly. What is free speech? You have to go back to, as she and I, and then also Ralph and I, have been discussing, even in the Landmarks case, where Judge Mukasey, Michael Mukasey, the notorious Michael Mukasey of the Attorney General, where he had said that speech in itself is a crime. And this is what they were doing to Lynn. Not only is her zealous and righteous and political defense of the Sheikh a crime, but her ability to speak, the ability of the Sheikh to speak, the ability of Lynn to speak out is in itself consider
and
a crime.
As the Second Circuit said, not only did Lynn Stewart continue speaking, she went around the country in law schools and graduate schools and undergraduate schools challenging people to debate the issue with her. She is corrupting our youth. And as I said to Lynn, very interesting that they would use these terms. It kind of reminds me of a couple other people who were detained and tortured for their and killed for their corrupting of the youth. And I says, kind of Socrates and Jesus Christ. And I imagine there's a whole lot of others who told the truth when the society didn't want to hear it. So I says, they put you in another class when they talk to you in these forms or when they write things like you're traveling around the country and universities corrupting our youth. Well, let us hope that we have you out here again very soon, Lynn, traveling around the country, corrupting our youth, our elders, our middle-aged people to the truth of what's happening and to give them the passion for justice that you have and your view of the world as inclusive, not exclusive.
And so, Ralph, we discussed some cases of Lynn's successes, such as the case of Nasser Ahmed, who had been Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman, one of his many paralegals. She said he had 10 or 11 paralegals because everything had to be translated and people took care of him. And Nasser Ahmed had been arrested on immigration charges.
And he did 3.5 years under ridiculous prison conditions before a courageous, and let me add that again, a courageous immigration judge wanted to see this secret information, and it quickly was exposed to be no information whatsoever.
And Lynn mentioned that she had Ramsey Clark on the stand, and Ramsey said that when he had been attorney general, he can testify that many of the files that are called secret contain gossip, whispered evidence. And Lynn had said, if you refuse to show me the secret, it wasn't just even secret evidence. Lynn said that in the case of Nasser Ahmed, the prosecutors wouldn't even tell her the charges on the basis of which Nasser Ahmed was arrested. So she said, well, you won't tell me the charges, at least provide this to the judge. Well, the judge, this was, as Ralph says, this was a courageous judge. And the judge, in his decision, he wrote a very strong decision, opinion. He said, you know, law enforcement agents, Lynn told me, he said, come to me, and they think I'm going to believe everything they present. But I have to look to where the truth lies. And this was a case where she was able to free somebody who the state, the U.S. government, the representatives of the capitalist order were going to put away, and he is now on the street and living his life despite the 3.5 years of torture that he underwent in his incarceration. This was the courage of Lynn and the astuteness of Lynn. And that's one of the things that we discussed today. I'd also briefly like to say the conditions under which Lynn is being subjected to at MCC. And this is very important because Lynn is, at first, she was in a cell where, and this isn't even the area where she is at MCC was not even devised as cells. It was the former dispensary. And it used to be that women had the full floor, and now because of crowding, they have half the floor. It's an area that should have held no more than 40 to 50 people, and there are at least 60 now. Lynn had one roommate, and now she's in a situation where she has three roommates. It's a small area, and she's working in the dark. She says, my roommates like to sleep late, and I wake up at 5 o'clock. So she is functioning in the dark until they wake up, and she has the issues of three women in very close proximity in a small area.
We're
so
talking
Lynn,
about a cell with four bunks.
It's an ad hoc cell, Ralph. These are not even constructed as cells. This is, they turned a dispensary into the prison unit. And what's interesting is we all know how social Lynn is, how vivacious Lynn is. And what was very sad, what was painful to hear, is she said, I'm becoming a hermit.
Yeah, and that's something for Lynn Stewart to think, that she is, personality is being changed. And I say, how is Lynn? She is in jail, doing the best that we can expect of people in jail.
And she writes, and she has contact. Please send the letter. She responds to all the letters. Ralph will give the address at the end of the show. And she has visitors. She has legal visitors. And she has Ralph diligently seeing her each and every week. And Lynn is reading. She's reading the newspaper every day. She stays on top of all the news. She's reading magazines. She's reading many books. But it is not the same. This is a woman who's devoted her life to defending, to pursuing political causes. And here she is in a situation where she said, you know, there are some very nice people here. I get to talk to them. I can assist them in understanding the letters, the legal issues. She can't, of course, she can't do any law. She's been disbarred, and she's very clear about that. And she's very clear with the people around her who come to her that she's in this position. But she can even correct their grammar. And she can provide a lot of assistance, but it is not the same. And it is a great burden, and she's trying to hold up in spite of this terrible, terrible toll.
While Lynn Stewart is being tormented, persecuted, prosecuted, buried alive in the prison system by this vicious regime, guess what? The Blackwater mercenaries, who are basically hired killers, not only within the United States, not just in Iraq and in Afghanistan, but at the time of Katrina, 75,000 enforcement troops led by Blackwater in New Orleans were targeting the black population of Greater New Orleans. Tomorrow. Exclusive. Blackwater wins piece of $10 billion mercenary deal. October 2nd, 8 private security firms have won the State Department's giant worldwide protective services contract. Two of these firms are longtime state contract holders, the private firms DynCorp and Triple Canopy. But Blackwater, using the blandly named cutout International Development Solutions, is getting the lion's share. Mr. Obama and Blackwater, the Bobbsey twins. Blackwater and Obama embrace the repression apparatus, which is aimed at all of us, for which this whole terror scare, all of these contrived operations that we're now being treated to across Europe and by the New York Police Department in the United States, were anticipated with Lynn's defense of the falsely accused Sheikh, the Landmarks case, the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, the FBI, the Mossad, the Central Intelligence Agency, the rulers of this country. That's what Lynn represents, the challenge to all of this, brothers and sisters, and it's unfolding all around us as we speak. And with every day, it becomes more intense, more massive, and more repressive.
And, Ralph, those of you in the tri-state area, you have an opportunity tomorrow night, that's Wednesday night, October 6th, to go to see the film, the long-awaited film, Lynn Stewart, An American Story. It's a fundraiser, and it's at the Maisley on 127th Street.
Theater.
Oh, the Maisley Theater at 127th and what's the cross street?
Lenox Avenue and, or Malcolm X Boulevard.
Okay, so that's close enough. And the number to call is 917-853-9759 for more information.
And get all the details on who's going to be moderating there. We have Sarah Flounders, Ramsey Clark, Dolphy Hazel, myself,
and
Maya there to talk about this film.
For those of you who've been saying that I'm hiding myself from my WBAI listeners, I am here, and I am going to be there, and I'm also going to be at Pam Africa's event on Thursday night. I'm looking forward to seeing Pam. And that's Thursday night at...
I am not sure. At St. Mary's Church on 126th Street.
That's good enough.
And that's we all know where that is. And on Friday evening, in front of MCC, starting at 4:30, at Center and Worth Street. We're going to parade from there, Tom Payne Park, around to the prison for Lynn's birthday. And we are going to give Lynn a birthday celebration. Although it is not the nicest place to have a birthday celebration, this is where she is, so this is where we must go to celebrate Lynn's
and
birthday.
I will be there. We all want to bring your noisemakers. We want this to be, we want everyone to hear. And what an appropriate place to have a celebration for Lynn Stewart, but Tom Payne Park, the man who is symbolizes speaking truth to power. So, we have just a short time for some call-ins. I'd like to take some of your questions. Remember, the Maisley Theater tomorrow night, 127th Street, for Lynn Stewart, An American Story, Pam Africa on Thursday night and Friday. Most of all, please show up at 4:30 at Tom Payne Park at Worth and
Center.
Worth and Center
to
let everyone know about our support and our celebration of Lynn Stewart. So the number to call is 212-209-2900. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello.
Welcome to WBAI.
Hello.
And do you have a question for us?
Yes, I do. I'm basically a statement. I would say that Lynn Stewart's one of the bravest ladies I've heard or followed her story. And you've been very kind to do such for her. And the problem that we're having, like you say, you describe it as our fascist state of today. We're having problems all the way around the block. We're having problems with their war on drugs, taking people off the street that are only users, and they torture these people. It's a terrible time right now. This amount of power that they're showing against people, the brute force they're doing, the cruelty they're showing in this country is terrible. I don't know what else to say other than that. And just keep up the good work. And
I can tell you what to say. It's don't mourn, organize.
Organize.
As Lynn has always said, remember Joe Hill, don't mourn, organize. And that is the purpose of taking AIM, and that is what Lynn has been committed her life to doing, whether it was with legal work or whether it was organizing in the school system. Lynn has been there, and let's use that as the model. Organize. Organization is the key for changing the world.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Hello, you're on the air. Hello?
Hi. I just need to know what time at the Maylis Theater tomorrow.
7:30.
Thank you.
Again, if we didn't say 7:30 tomorrow night for Lynn Stewart, An American Story. 7:30 for the Pam Africa event at the church.
St. Mary's
at
Church, 126th Street.
Oh, that's a church that Ralph and I have spoken at.
Right,
many times. And again, 4:30 earlier.
At Worth and Center to begin the short two-block march around to MCC, where we will celebrate Lynn Stewart's birthday.
This is a very active week. We talk about organizing. We want you all there. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I want to talk a little bit about something that has three steps, three sections to it. You can take a dog and you can have an owner, a trainer, a leader, the boss who trains the dog, and the dog doesn't even know that it's being trained. It just does whatever it's told to do.
The second step
is you go to a circus and the same thing happens in a circus. Instead of just a dog, it's elephants and horses and monkeys and all those things. And the trainers train the animals to do what they do, and the animals have no idea what they're doing. The third step we go to is human animals in armies. They are given orders, and they are told what to do, and they just do it, and they basically have no idea that they're murdering other people, that they're bombing other people, that they're killing other people, and they have no consciousness of what the hell's going on. You want me to go a little further?
No, I want to stop you right here because I got your drift, and I want to even start at your point one, which is a subject we'll talk about at more length. Myself, being a dog trainer as one of my life's works, and you're incorrect about animals who have, especially elephants and primates and dogs too, have a lot of intelligence, and they are aware of what's going on. And when you talk about the army in particular, you're talking about a poverty workforce, people who have really, if they need a job, if they think they're going to get some education, at this point in time, it's not a volunteer army, really. It's called a volunteer army, but it is an army of the poor. And people do understand, and that's what we saw in Vietnam when basically you had a military rebellion at the time of the Vietnam War.
And I'd like to point out...
the website of Iraqi Veterans Against the War. Learn about the over 200,000 veterans who are suffering from neurological illness and disease, the consequence of the weaponry that the U.S. imperialism uses. Our working class youth are the cannon fodder of the imperialist armies, and every generation that is subjected to this not merely comes back traumatized, but awakened. You have a huge suicide rate amongst returnees from these wars. They are not indifferent to what is being demanded of them and what they are being compelled to do. They are sickened by it, literally and emotionally. No, this an entire generation is not merely traumatized, but educated through this terrible life experience. So the consequence of these imperial wars is that a generation returns and educates others.
May I say that the major crime, one of the major crimes that every government does when they send these soldiers and young people to war is when they come home, they cut off their treatment. It is routine. Vietnam War, the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, they cut off. The very people who sent people to war cut off their medical treatment, their medical and psychological treatment.
We have time for one more question. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, I'm glad that you had me. It's not so much a question, it's just an expression of my love for Lynn Stewart, and Ralph has stuck by her all this time, and also you, Maya, and Ralph. And thank you for this show. I'm calling from San Francisco. I wish we could get you on tape, PFA.
Well, we have tried. I have to say, this is a pitch for WBAI, the only Pacifica station that carries us. It has the radical gumption and heart and soul to carry Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. Thank you so much for calling.
We have Lynn as well, and I'm always thinking about her. And life is a prison for everyone in this country, so long as people like her or Mumia are in jail so unjustly. But thank you for the show, and I hope Lynn hears these words. I love you, Lynn, and you will make it.
Thank you so much. Is listening. Lynn, it's not only Lynn, it's the other people at MCC and in other prisons across the United States. We want to thank those on the Internet who listen to us. And again, as we have somebody calling from San Francisco, I want to remind you tomorrow night, those of you in the New York area, you can see Lynn Stewart, An American Story. It's at the Maisley Theater on 127th Street.
Near Malcolm X Boulevard.
Malcolm X Boulevard, and the number to call for more information is 917-853-9759. And that's Wednesday night, Thursday night. We hope to see you.
On Mumia at the St. Mary's Church with Pam Africa. And for any other information on political prisoners, I am very anxious to pass out that information. If you call that number, it'll put you in touch with somebody who will give you the information.
And again, everyone, all out on Friday, 4:30, Tom Paine Park, to protest Lynn's incarceration, to defend Lynn Stewart, and to celebrate her birthday. This has been Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. Please contact us at takingaim@wbai.org and visit our website, www.takingaimradio.com. I'm
October 7th is the National Day to Defend Public Education. We say no to budget cuts, school closures, tuition hikes, layoffs, privatization, or union busting. Eliminate systems of racism